Coming up on this special edition of the ARP Podcast, we wrap up our coverage of the Shiny Developer Conference by speaking with members of the ARP Studio team. In part one, we have a panel discussion with JJ Allaire, Jeff Allen, and Hadley Wickham about the conference and future directions of the ARP Studio IDE. And in part two, I have an extended conversation with Joe Chang, creator of Shiny, about the origins of Shiny and his perspective on the future direction going forward. So I hope you're ready for this exciting edition of the ARP Podcast. This is episode 18. Are you ready? This is episode 18 of the ARP Podcast. My name is Eric, and I am excited to bring this episode to you because this is kind of putting a wrap on my coverage of the Shiny Developer Conference, but we're going out with a bang, as they say. On the last day of the conference, I had the pleasure of being able to sit down with members of the ARP Studio team just as things kind of wrapped up. And I was able to be fortunate enough to chat with JJ Allaire, Jeff Allen, and yes, Hadley Wickham, in a nice, entertaining discussion about their opinion of the conference and, you know, where things are headed in terms of the ARP Studio IDE. And then in part two of this episode, you're also going to hear from the creator of Shiny himself, Joe Chang. We had an extended conversation just about how Shiny was originally developed, kind of what was the inspiration for it, some of his perspective on the key features that were outlined in the conference, and his thoughts on kind of extensions and future directions going forward. I will say, just before we get to those interviews, just kind of share my thoughts on the conference itself. First, I think from my perspective, it was the first R conference I've ever attended in person. And I think this was kind of the perfect audience or setting for someone like me because it wasn't too big. So there wasn't like multiple tracks. We were all kind of looking at the same material together. But I think the size of it really facilitated a lot of interactive discussions, both with, you know, the ARP Studio team and the instructors and just among each other during the breaks. I was able to kind of make some connections and meet new members of the community. And then, as you've seen in the past couple of episodes, I was able to have some great conversations with two of the members I've been really following closely, Dean Atelli and Vincent Nice, about their work with Shiny. And it's been really good to get to know them. And hopefully I'm able to collaborate with them in the future on, you know, things with Shiny or R in general. But this episode was definitely, I'm very excited to bring this to you. And then I think that's enough of me rambling. I'm going to play each of these interviews in sequence back to back. So without further ado, let's dive into our main topics for today. Our interview with members of the ARP Studio team. All right, everybody. This is an exciting day for all of us that's attended the Shiny Developer Conference, although it's somewhat bittersweet. We have just ended the full conference itself. I know I'm speaking for myself, but I think a lot of the attendees, this has been a absolutely excellent experience. For a lot of us, it was our first R conference that we've attended. But without further ado, I am joined by members of the R Studio team right next to me. So I'm going to kind of go one by one and have them introduce themselves and their role in the company. So first, JJ.
Yeah. Hi, I'm JJ Allaire. I'm the original developer of the R Studio IDE and founder of the company.
I'm Hadley Wickham, the chief scientist and author of lots of R packages.
I'm Jeff Allen. I'm a software engineer. I work on Shiny Server.
All right. Well, thanks so much, guys, for taking the time to talk with me today. I'm going to start off with, now that we've wrapped the conference, have there been any surprises in terms of how the our audience has received the material? Was there any insights to kind of the questions that have been asked in terms of future directions for, say, this conference going forward, or even for Shiny in general? So I'll just let whoever wants to talk first.
I guess I've been really surprised by just like how far people have pushed Shiny. Like that, I think the talk, I mean, I've seen previous stuff of all the internal RStudio things already. So to me, like, the exciting thing was seeing what our customers have been doing, like, and Shiny users have been doing to make really awesome apps and really pushing the boundaries in pretty incredible ways.
Yeah, there seems to be quite a bit of demand for things to push Shiny farther. And so we saw, you know, we delivered some, but then like ShinyJS, and people are doing all kinds of wonderful things with JavaScript. And so it was great to see that. And we sort of feel like we're just not quite ahead of the curve there. Like, we need to keep up with all the things that people want to do.
Right, right. I know I was personally fascinated with, of course, the material that your team has presented, but also the lightning talks and the user talks, where I'm just seeing so many different uses that I know me personally want to take in and try out with. So maybe getting to another, kind of stepping back a bit, what was the kind of motivation for saying, okay, we've had Shiny for a couple of years now, let's go ahead and do a dedicated conference, just the Shiny, the Shiny Developer Conference? Kind of, what was the motivation for forming that?
I think we have a lot of communication with people on like the Shiny discuss list. We have a lot of ad hoc side conversations that happen at user groups, but we really felt like we wanted to get a critical mass of feedback, and also to kind of force us to articulate a lot of the things that were important about Shiny. That, like, Joe really was motivated. He wanted people to understand reactivity really well, and he didn't feel like he could do that in under 4 hours, you know. And there was a bunch of other things that he felt like he wanted to share and that we had to share. And so that was kind of where it came from.
Cool. And this question maybe more for you, Hadley. You did a great talk about using Shiny gadgets and embedding that in your pipeline for RStudio. I know you've been so focused on kind of the whole data analysis pipeline recently, of importing data, processing with things like dplyr and tidyr, and then of course visualizing, which you've obviously done quite a bit. Where do you see in terms of kind of the interactive capabilities of an analysis, and how Shiny is going to play a role, especially with the new features going ahead and making analysis easier for our users?
Yeah, I think there's just a lot we'll still to do in terms of decreasing the feedback loop so that your iteration time is even faster. And I think I feel like there's a lot of work ahead of me in terms of making gadgets and add-ins so you can explore your data even more quickly, so you can kind of prototype your dplyr expressions and get feedback like in hundreds of milliseconds. So as you type, you're seeing that feedback, so you can as quickly as possible get the feedback. You never end up sort of running a code that doesn't work, because you're constantly seeing what the results are going to be as you type. And I think that's going to be a big time saver. And then thinking about, you know, how is that going to be an add-in, or does it need to be integrated more deeply into RStudio, and just that preview. So, like, just do it so you can, the quicker you can iterate, the better. It's really, really powerful. And there's just so much we can do with the integration of JavaScript and HTML widgets. And
Right. I mean, frankly, I personally don't know a lot about JavaScript or CSS or things like that. So the fact that some of it's abstracted away, but I can see that if I take the time to invest a little bit, there is so much potential to additional things we can do as well. So obviously, as Hadley mentioned, the RStudio IDE has been a huge revolution in how we develop our code. I know obviously a lot of great features are in at this point, but when we look at the rest of 2016, what are some of the key maybe new features or ideas that you want to explore personally with the development?
We got a few things that I think, foremost of which is we want to add kind of a notebook mode to the R Markdown editor. Okay. So that when you're working on an R Markdown document, you can sort of work in a notebook mode where output is in line. You can kind of use it as a like a literate REPL. So that's where we're working, spending a lot of time on that. We're very excited about that. We've actually doing a bunch of work now to kind of create a front end for some of Hadley's data import packages that he wrote last year. So sort of an interactive front end where you get the file and it shows you, you know, what the data is going to look like, what the types are. You can tweak them around. You can change the settings, things like that. Sort of to Hadley's point about getting immediate feedback. You can see what the import is going to be. You can tweak it, you know, and then boom, and it gives you the code. And then we're going to do some work with the, you saw presented at the package, the ProfViz package.
Yes.
So we're going to do some work to integrate that into the IDE, integrate profiling more deeply into the IDE.
Right.
And then I think the last thing, this isn't, I think there are implications for the IDE in this, but it's a broader initiative, is we want to get a lot better at teaching R and helping other people teach R. And there's the base R. But then it's also when, if I have an R package and I want to show people how to use it, how can I create something that's really informative, interactive, effective at teaching, makes people effective at learning? Right. So there will be some things that we do in the IDE for that, but then that's kind of a broader initiative.
Right. That's been a subject close to me personally, where I work. I've done some internal R trainings, and what R Studio brings in terms of a standardized environment, for especially the server edition, is absolutely critical. But I know anything that you guys can do to even make that jump a little easier, especially for those that come from other statistical packages. There's a certain one with three letters that comes to mind. But anything, I mean, obviously, Hadley, what you've done with Haven to help even just get the data into R to begin with, when we don't have the privilege of converting it in another way, that is such a critical thing. So, yeah, the R Studio ID, I definitely am a big fan of that. And also, I guess now that you've had obviously the Shiny 0.13 release, given what we've heard in the conference, what do you think are kind of the next things for Shiny itself going forward?
Maybe Hadley has a better idea. I have not spoken to Joe, or maybe Jeff has a better idea. I don't know what his, because he delivered, or the team delivered such a huge payload of things for this conference. They might want to catch their
breath.
All
I know is
they might want to catch their breath for a little bit.
It's going to involve monads.
Yeah. So you'll have to ask Joe. I think he's supposed to, you're going to get together with him, I think.
I know soon. One of the things that we've been working on, and I talked briefly about this on the server side, but also within Shiny, is just like improving the robustness of the connections. And so ensuring that the user experience, especially, so within Shiny, there's an improvement that we can make on applications like dashboards, where it really doesn't matter if you've been disconnected for 12 hours. Like, we can just reconnect you, and you don't need to know that you were ever disconnected.
Right.
So improving some experiences like that, I think.
Yeah. Because I know a lot of the people where I work, they're not exactly, you know, software developers by trade. We're all basically statisticians learning how to put our analyses into some interactive way. So any way to kind of mask any technical hiccups along the way, where then if some grays out or some time's out, they're going to call our IT group and be like, what's wrong with our servers? Where it's not really anything wrong. It's just, you know, the way things are. But I'll definitely be interested in seeing those improvements going forward.
The hope is that you'll see a lot fewer of those moving forward. So.
Yes, exactly. So, so this has been great to talk with you guys. I guess I'll give you guys a chance to either give some plugs of certain things going forward, or what do you want our listeners to kind of stay tuned for from our studio going forward?
I will say there's a new release of our studio coming out in early February. So I hope everybody downloads that. There's a preview version of it available now. So that's definitely worth a look. And I would say, take a look at, you can Google for R Studio add-ins. We have documentation on how to create add-ins. And really, you can write add-ins that are just things that like work in the editor. So you could do like create a refactoring tool that has no user interface. So those are interesting. But I think the Shiny gadget-based add-ins will be the most interesting one. So I hope people take a look at that and think about how it might make them and the people they work with more effective, to Hadley's point. And I hope we can see some really, really lights out stuff there. So that's...
Very good. Yeah.
And I think we'll probably see some stuff for kind of improved, making it easy to generate code too, because one of the things you often want to do in these add-ins is like express something that's hard to express in code, but you want to capture it in your code so that you can reproduce it the next time you run the script. So I think Joe and I have talked a little bit about maybe we need some better tools to help people like generate code that then could get saved back into the IDE.
yeah, I think that's going to be great from a reproducibility standpoint, especially for industries where that's such a critical item. Yep. Excellent. Well, obviously, I want you guys to enjoy the remainder of the conference, but thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk with me. I know our listeners are going to be really excited to see the materials of this going forward. And obviously, I think given the huge demand to get on this invitation list, that next year you're going to have a really large turnout. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. It's a good problem to have, right? Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. All right. Thank you very much. All right. Thanks, guys. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. So a series about Shiny, and in particular this series about the Shiny Developer Conference, frankly would not be complete without having a chat with the architect or the creator of Shiny itself. So with that said, it's my pleasure to welcome Joe Chang, CTO of RStudio, to the R Podcast. So Joe, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Eric.
All right, so I do have a lot of questions for you, especially about the conference, but I think for our listeners that may have heard obviously about you through your work with Shiny, maybe you could tell our listeners a bit about your background and how you got started with using R, and in particular RStudio.
Sure. Before I started working with R, I was a software engineer. I've been a software engineer ever since college, and mostly I'd worked at startups in the Boston area, just one startup after another. And a couple of them were founded by JJ Allaire, who was the founder of RStudio, and that's how I got to know him. And at the time that he started RStudio, I was at Microsoft. I had worked at a JJ startup that had been acquired by Microsoft, and I was still there, and he had already left. And he came to me having discovered R. I guess this was about 2008, late 2008 or early 2009. And, you know, it wasn't quite as obvious then as it is now, the impact that R would have. And I certainly didn't know anything about statistics or why statistics were interesting at all, honestly. I basically trusted JJ that this was going to be an interesting piece of software in the future. And also, to be honest, just getting the chance to work with JJ is not something that I would turn down lightly. And the product that he had in mind, the RStudio IDE, sounded so interesting. Just the idea of building an IDE on the web, those things were all just so interesting to me that that I felt like I had to take that that offer. And really, it has been over the last few years working at RStudio that obviously I've really come to appreciate R as a language, and statistics and data science as you know, just fascinating fields. Sure. I'm really glad I got the opportunity that I did.
Yeah, we're certainly glad that you're working on a lot of these innovative efforts. So I'll just give you a little background. I've been using R for now, it's about 11 or 12 years now, and I will say that before RStudio, like the IDE came along, it was just kind of this hodgepodge of mishmash IDE wannabes that I went back and forth, but nothing did like everything I wanted. Either some that did some things well, some did other things well, but it wasn't until RStudio came along that I felt like somebody finally got it right for all the pieces that we want, whether it's just being able to run code and see it clearly in the console, be able to see what the heck is in my workspace, because gosh knows how many objects we will create along in a session and what packages we have available. So thank goodness you guys came along, because it was, I mean, I don't want to discount the work from others, but there was really nothing that had such a focus that RStudio had. So I'm definitely, on behalf of others, especially the people I work with, we really appreciate RStudio itself. So obviously you worked on the IDE quite a bit, but maybe you could tell our listeners what the inspiration was in terms of finally creating this innovative package called Shiny.
Yeah, it was actually during the very early days of beta testing the IDE. In those days, we weren't even talking about it being a desktop product. It was only going to be a server product. And we had gone to McAllister College, which is where JJ went to school. And Professor Danny Kaplan there was our very first beta tester, I believe. And he very bravely tested our studio with, you know, an entire statistics class. And as in our first conversation with Danny in person, JJ said that we had kind of combined the web and R, and we meant you have an IDE for R in the web now. And what he heard was, oh, great, I can build little applications using R to illustrate statistical ideas visually and interactively. Oh, that's fantastic. That's exactly what I've been wanting. And we were like, oh, no. We're talking about this other thing. And Danny, you know, really, really understood about our studio. He understood the vision. He got it right away. But he said, and this other thing too, if you get around to it, that'd be amazing. And JJ and I talked about it during that visit. And what I said to JJ was, we should do that someday, but only if we know how to do it well. So both of us had built web frameworks before. There was a really obvious path to take some of the existing art for other programming languages and just make a straight port, or you know, just a similar model view controller style web framework for R. But then you're asking R users not only to learn how to write R code, but now they also need to become web developers. So to both of us, it was pretty clear that that was a total non-starter. And in particular for me, if you make very interactive, I guess what we call single page applications now, there's a lot of just inherently very complicated code that you have to write involving a lot of callbacks. So I just kind of thought to myself, we don't want to inflict that on our users, but if we could come up with some kind of a tidy syntax for expressing applications that we, you know, wouldn't be too much of a cognitive burden on people, then absolutely, that sounds like a great idea. And it was years later that we were at another conference, and somebody else, I want to say it was Ian Fellows, who is the guy behind, I want to say Deducer, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I believe it was he and I were talking over lunch and just talking about this general idea of GUIs and R and, you know, what is better in code and what things are better as interactive applications. And we just talked about this idea of building a web framework that anyone could who was an R user would be able to successfully build applications with. And I was talking about it as some distant, far off thing. And he said to me, somebody should really do that. And probably it should be you. Or you guys, you know, meaning our studio. So that kind of rebooted the idea in my mind. And it was, I think later that year, at the USAR conference in 2012, I believe, at Vanderbilt, when it was the final day of the conference, and I woke up in the morning in my bed, and when I opened my eyes, the first thought that popped into my head, my first conscious thought was, reactivity, a concept that I discovered recently from Meteor, a JavaScript framework. If you combined reactivity on the server side with an easy to express UI, at the time I was thinking that you'd write HTML with annotations, but with some easy to use UI builder, that's it. Those are the two things you need. And boom, you have the ability to write what we now call Shiny apps. So that, as soon as that picture appeared in my head, I just had a feeling like we have to build this. So I you know, fired up Notepad or whatever and just sketched out what that code would look like, what an app in this framework would look like. And I ran downstairs and I found JJ and I said, look at this, you know, look. Like, what do you think? And he took one look and was like, yes, that is what you're working on full time from now on. And that was it. That really was the genesis, like that combination of those two ideas. And at the time, it was very speculative how far we could take this model. And that's one of the things that's been the biggest pleasures for me about this whole journey with Shiny over the last, 3.5 years has been how that initial combination of easy to express UI and reactive programming, we have not found the bottom of that rabbit hole yet. We just keep going. And every time we think now we've explored everything that we can do with this, there's just a whole nother vista that opens up, including last week. So
exactly,
including yesterday, actually. There's stuff that I'm not ready to talk about yet, but we'll be talking about soon that really, kind of take reactivity in yet another direction. So it is really exciting, and it's just a whole lot of fun to work on.
Awesome. Well, that's a teaser for in the future then.
Sorry about
so, that. So yeah, no, I'm always plugged into what you guys are announcing. So I guess since Shiny, of course, was first formed, like you said, 3.5 years ago, as users were starting to get play with it a bit, and obviously there were some early adopters, one of which I've talked with on a previous episode at the Shiny conference, Vincent Nice, of course, who makes Radiant. Did you notice like any patterns as users starting to get into Shiny of like what were some of the parts that they understood pretty well from the beginning, or maybe some parts that, or some concepts that they were having trouble understanding that, you kind of sense that, oh, we're going to have to put more guidance or more tutorials around certain parts of Shiny. Did you notice any of those points?
I think it's hard to say because from the beginning, the reception has been so great from the community that we have such a diversity of people who are trying out Shiny and building really significant things on Shiny. So on the one hand, there are people like Simon Urbanek, who's in our core and one of the elite programmers in the R community. I saw him at a conference and we were talking about reactive programming, and he was really fascinated by the idea. And, before I even finished my demo, I feel like he had internalized a lot of these really deep concepts. And other people who, were early adopters of Shiny, and I feel like still haven't really internalized the concepts. It's not their fault. It is a quite unnatural style of programming. So I think that Shiny users are a very diverse bunch, and we're sort of all over the map. So I'm constantly surprised at how much people do understand, especially at this conference. I think all of us at our studio were surprised by how sophisticated the average user was at the conference. But at the same time, we still get new questions in every day on the Shiny Discuss list that could be answered, with some time in the tutorial. So I think it's really either way. And that's been one of the things that's been interesting to me is how much education is needed for everyone to get something. Topic after topic that I thought we had, we were done with the feature, we were done documenting it, and then we constantly get questions. So we realize, oh, nope, we did not quite explain that well enough and we have to go at it again, so.
Right. Well, it's kind of like R itself. It's such a, while it's marketed or it's been push the statisticians, now we have so many others getting into it as well and from all sorts of different fields. So we're experiencing this in different pockets. So I think we'll just kind of dovetail into the conference itself. Now, I was there as well, and obviously I think it was, you really showed how well you guys prepared for it. I thought everything was logically laid out in terms of the topics, and I think it's no accident that the very first thing that we dive deep into was reactivity, because it's such a fundamental piece of Shiny. So just in the prep work of the conference itself, what kind of, first of all, it must have taken a lot of work to prepare for it, but what kind of steps did you guys take to get ready for such an innovative conference to happen?
Yeah, I think for us, there was a surprising amount of time that we spent trying to convince ourselves that we could pull off a conference in the first place, that a conference was desirable and needed, and that we could do it successfully. And I think once we made that decision, then the list of topics came together relatively easily. And I think a number of the presenters have told me it was relatively easy for them to come up with their presentations. But I got to tell you, I really suffered making that reactivity presentation. That was one of the hardest things that I've had to do, partially because my strength is writing code. You know, anytime either written communications or presentations, I really have a hard time stopping.
Well, I think a lot of us share that.
Yeah, yeah. So for this reactivity in particular, I wanted so badly for it to go well. And the topics are so abstract and they could be approached in so many different ways. And I mean, I've been thinking about reactivity nonstop for, you know, several years now. So I also have to put myself back into the place of someone who's just kind of been through the tutorial. So for all these reasons, it was incredibly challenging. And I spent a lot of time writing and rewriting. And I mean, for a while there, every week I was just throwing the entire thing out and starting over with a completely new approach. And, you know, I got towards the end and I had, I don't know, 40 slides put together or something. And then I was reading an article or a blog post or something where someone was saying the like complete worst way to teach someone something is to talk at them about it, and particularly for technical topics. So right, I was like, all right, right, I better start over and make it based on, you know, completely on exercises. So, you know, I think if the talk had been, if the conference had been 1 week later, maybe I would have thrown out the, you know, presentation one more time and you would have heard something totally different, and who knows how it would have gone. But I'm really happy that it was received as well as it was. It seemed like most people really got the point and enjoyed it.
Well, I think, you know, I will acknowledge that I did feel more like a novice compared to a lot of the other attendees. But with that said, I felt like after your presentation, a lot of things finally started to click as to why things work the way they do. Like, I've been through the tutorials, I've been through the articles, I've done at least, you know, 5 or 6 internal apps at my company and some stuff on the side, but I always felt like I was kind of winging it in terms of crossing my fingers that this reactive object is going to map correctly to this output and kind of hope for the best. But now, you really compared and contrast nicely the concept of what's reactive and what we observed and the concept of side effects. And I think the exercise format is like the only real way to instill that and kind of make others practice that. And when I've given our trainings internally in the past, I've been guilty of, like you said earlier, talking to them but not really prodding them into trying something. So I think with Shiny as well as some other R concepts, you really almost have to make your audience practice this and make sure that they have the opportunity to ask questions on why things work and not just, like I said, cross their fingers and be like, oh, I got it right this time, okay, yay. But actually understand, not to say theory behind it, but there is a methodology behind it. And reactivity, I think, is a new concept to a lot of our users. So I think just diving into those details is extremely helpful, especially for me. So
yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for putting all that effort into it. Because like you said, that's probably one of the hardest things to prepare for sure.
Yeah. Let me add one thing to that. What you said about how you felt using Shiny and reactivity before you really understood some of those things. So on the one hand, Shiny is designed so that even if you're pretty new at it and you haven't really had time to sit down and study the materials, that you can kind of wing your way through it. You know, like that's what it was. That was part of our goal in designing the framework the way it's designed, is that you don't need to internalize the concepts before you start using it. But it's really important to me, and it always has been, that when you explore deeper with Shiny, when you do take the time to dig around a little bit and learn a little more deeply about some of these fundamental concepts, that you find that what's underneath is really nice, you know.
That's pretty elegant.
That reactivity, it's almost like the deeper you go into it, the more elegant it becomes. And for the UI, there's something similar in that, you know, at first it seems like you're dealing with these kind of magic function calls that make a sidebar and you know, drop a select input into it. And then when you get a little bit more into it, you realize, oh, these things are just generating HTML.
Yes.
When you look at how those particular functions are implemented, you realize that, oh, it's not only just HTML, but the way you express HTML in Shiny is extremely elegant and, you know, very simple. And all of these you know, bootstrappy type things that we're doing in the UI, they're incredibly small chunks of HTML generating code that you also can go and do yourself, either in your apps or in packages or in modules. It all composes. You can compute on these HTML objects. And what I have long hoped was that the end result of having this system where you can start out, and even if things don't make sense, you can be a little bit productive. But the deeper you dive in, and the more effort you put into it, the more you're rewarded, is that there was a line from, there's a blogger named Kathy Sierra. I don't know if you're familiar with her.
I think I've read her work before. Yeah.
Yeah. And her blog is all about making products that make users passionately loyal to them. And one of the main things that I took away from her writings is that some products that are really well designed, you use them and you think, wow, this product kicks ass, you know, and that's great. Other ones, you use them and they take a little more effort and you have to really invest. But when you do, you're rewarded. And what you feel when you come away from those experiences, wow, I kick ass. And that is the that has long been my hope, that Shiny engenders that kind of feelings in people, that they put in this effort and they're not just happy with the result that they get, but they're also happy with how their thinking has been able to change, and you know, that they've been able to understand these really elegant concepts. And that also is something that I was really encouraged by at the conference. People seemed to not only get those reactivity examples, but they really enjoyed it. A number of people told me that they went home that night and did the rest of the examples from the slides, even though I didn't get
right,
to them.
Right.
And that's great. You know, I that's the way I feel when I discover something new about reactivity, and I'm glad that at least some other people feel that way as well.
Yeah, I'll echo that. And when I was waiting for my flights on Monday, I pulled out the laptop. I went through. I've completed all but the last exercise, which I believe you acknowledge is a bit diabolical.
The last one is hard. Yeah, it's
yeah. So I'm going to need some more time with that. But I remember when I got exercise 6, I was like, oh man, I'm really on the right track here. This stuff's actually working in my head. So I'm
good.
So yeah, that was awesome that you gave me those kind of homework, if you will, the practice of that.
Great.
So I think, you know, with the conference happening, it was this great blend of not only your team discussing the new features, but also the user contributed talks, like the lightning talks and some of the more extended talks. I know I was blown away by a lot of that, of what other people are doing. What were some of the cool parts that you saw in those kind of user contributions that really kind of took you aback and be like, yeah, this is really working?
Yeah, it'd be hard for me to choose a favorite. And a lot of these things I've been very familiar with over the years, that, you know, Vincent, I've known since day one of him working on Radiant. And obviously Radiant, I think, is monumental, right? It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. I've been trying to emulate it to this day. And luckily talking to him, a lot of things made sense after that. But it's an excellent showcase.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. But, you know, I think everyone just really did such a nice job, not only in what they were able to build, but in how well they prepared for the talks. I think it was particularly cool to see some of the ones from like Friss and Airbnb and Genentech, in that we don't usually get to. I guess I get a lot of questions and a lot of emails from the Shiny Discuss list from people who are doing their work out in the open. But for people who are working on apps that stay inside companies, it's often harder, or they need to be very cagey about what they share with us. So it was cool that those companies were willing to open their doors a little bit and let us get a peek at some of the stuff that they've done. And it's really pretty cool how much use those companies have been making with Shiny or of Shiny and how far they were able to push things. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in somewhat similar situation here, but I will say that I've been making Shiny apps that have contributed to some very important like design choices or decisions to be made. But if I'd had to resort to like a huge PowerPoint deck of like all these different graphs that nobody could really understand just on that format, but then it was a pretty simple app that kind of gave me the most traction with. It was just a simple sidebar app with just a few different drop downs, but it just got everybody talking. And making these key decisions. So I know we're hoping to share some of that in the open in the near future, but it's been very helpful for us too. So I think I'll also ask about, obviously, the timing of this conference is when a lot of new features have come into Shiny. To me, one of the biggest ones that I'm using immediately is the concept of modules. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about the background on how modules came about.
Sure. So modules, they're really something that I've resisted for a long time. We got questions, I guess not quite from the very beginning, but maybe a year into Shiny's existence, we started getting questions about how do I organize my code? How do I take a complex app and break it into pieces? Oh, actually, Vincent, I think maybe brought it up right away.
I bet.
he, I think, was maybe an outlier in terms of how early he saw the need for it. Sure. And he came up with his own solution, like he did for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people would ask me that. And you know, I would say, I'm not sure what you're asking me. Everything in Shiny can be managed with functions. So, you know, you can call functions from your server function. You can make functions that return UI. You know, what's the problem, people? You know,
just right, right.
The function is the unit of reuse in R. So it's the unit of reuse in Shiny as well. What I was really overlooking was that even if you use functions to, you know, either interact with the server side and do reactive stuff or to generate stuff on the client, the inputs and outputs and their IDs, they form a flat namespace that you can't escape. So there's like a global namespace that all the IDs of input and output widgets, they all need to be unique within that namespace.
Right. A lot of us found this out the hard way.
Yeah. So at first I was still pretty stubborn about it. I said, yeah, that's fine. Just pass in an ID into your functions and use that to prefix all of your sub IDs, I guess. And while that technically worked, I think there were two really big problems with that. Number one, the syntax now for interacting with these inputs and outputs was just really gross. So instead of saying output $foo, you'd have to say output double square bracket, paste 0, ID, you know, comma, dash, foo.
This is bringing back some poor memories. Yes.
It's really bad. And until I kind of did it a few times, I didn't quite internalize how bad it was. You know, in most other languages, concatenating a string is just plus, right? But it's really bad when you have to paste these things together. And the other thing was that even if that was an acceptable solution, it's still it's not enough that it's possible, right? Too many users out there, they'll never ever put together that, oh, I just need to use functions and I need to, you know, take these IDs and prepend them. There are just a lot of leaps of logic you have to make. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons I've learned over the last year, is that it's not about what we make possible, it's about what we make accessible. And I don't just mean technically, I also mean in terms of like marketing these features. So I'll give you an example. Shiny Gadgets, this has been possible for about 2.5 years now, at least, if not longer.
Really? I'm surprised. Wow.
Yeah. So the Bioconductor guys had asked for the addition of the stop app function because they wanted to build interactive tools that they could use straight from R. So they've actually been using Gadgets for years now. And I've been, you know, I've documented the stop app feature. I've told people, both in person and in conferences, you can use stop app to return values, and therefore you can, you know, build tools that do stuff. And everybody's like, oh, okay. And then nobody does it, except for the Bioconductor guys, or almost nobody. And it really wasn't until this past fall, I had to give a talk at a URL conference in London, held by Mango Solutions. And I was thinking about what to talk about. And I said to myself, you know what, the whole notion of being able to build tools using Shiny, not just apps, like, why hasn't that taken off? And I think the problem was because that concept did not have a name. And just that lack of a name for your brain to hold on to and say, I'm building one of these things, I think that just made it really too abstract for people to get their heads around. So just by naming that, just by saying Shiny now supports this new thing called gadgets, oh, what's a gadget? Let me go learn about a gadget. Whereas before I'd say, okay, you've written a Shiny app, now add Stop app and you've got a tool. And it's just like, what? Well, I don't, that's not what I'm building. I'm building an app, you know? So, so modules, I think, is another one of those things where there's nothing in module, or there's not that much in modules that, you know, anybody couldn't do themselves. But it really gives us an opportunity to put a name on it, to put some functions around it, to kind of solidify it as a real thing. You know what, that was the other thing, is that other people were saying, you know, I figured out a way to, you know, have my own module system, but it would be really nice if it could work for real, you know, as if any mechanism that they came up with was not quote unquote real, right? Like if it wasn't blessed by me or didn't come with a function that was part of the Shiny namespace, it didn't count. So people were really reluctant to call the source function from within their Shiny server functions. They were really reluctant to come up with any kind of system of their own.
I see.
So fine. You know, if people need that, then great. But a funny thing happened like along the way when we finally decided, okay, let's take modules seriously. Let's build this. There's clearly a need. I got asked about it so many times at that conference in the fall that Mango had held. And a funny thing happened in that I realized that it's not just about creating these things and parking your code in them, but they really need to talk to each other, right?
Right.
Like what good is a module if you can't put values into it and get values out of them? And that turned out to be we talked about this at the conference, you need to do that with reactive expressions, and that turned out to be both more elegant than I ever could have imagined, but also harder to convey. You know, it turns out that it's actually quite a subtle concept for people to get, and I don't think that we fully succeeded at the conference for most people. So that's all the more reason for us to have this be an official feature that everybody can kind of rally around, and we can really educate people on the right way to build them, the right way to connect them, the right way to deploy them. So I'm really glad now that I kind of overcame my stubbornness and finally embraced modules.
Yeah. Well, I think, like I said, of all the features that have come new, that's the one that I'm putting in practice right now, because like what, say, Vincent's done, I was putting together a cobbled solution that was trying to do a similar thing. But yeah, I was hitting the namespace problems or session problems. But this, I think once you understand the concept, like you said, how portable and how important reactivity expressions are, or reactive expressions are, that is really a powerful mechanism. But I think for the community, it's just going to take some practice, really diving into this and showcasing some of these examples. And obviously there have been some early adopters that have put their code out there already, so I think we're all kind of learning together how to put this back in. But that was one of the features that obviously got my attention during the conference. And some other things that really were interesting were the concept of debugging your app, where I've done things like putting the browser function inside like part of the server function and just kind of trace everything. But there were some real nuggets in Jonathan's talk that I was like, I did not know that before. And none of this was particularly brand new, with the exception of stack traces, which thank goodness you put that in. Because I cannot tell you how many hours I've been trying to be like, which part of my server did that happen? Was it in this file? Man, those are painful. So
yes,
stack traces, bad. Thank you. But lots of little nuggets there that I was frantically taking notes, that just, I think having this venue to share all this in a dedicated setting is probably the way to get the community all starting to kind of adopt it as a whole. So those are excellent points there. So then I think other topics I was thinking about that were not quite addressed yet in specifically, maybe you want to get your thoughts on it, are, you know, there's still kind of an art in terms of how you design your apps, in terms of like where you put certain UI elements or things like that, where if you're a traditional web developer, you've had an understanding of how to do those things. But for an ordinary R user, we're now trying to think, okay, where should we put these inputs, or what's the best way to logically lay them out? Do you have any tips for how, you know, users of Shiny that don't have as much of a web development background can figure out how to best design their apps from a UI perspective, or anything like that?
I have to admit, I mean, even though I've been building UIs for many years, it's not, I feel like I can speak to you about coding, and I can tell you all about coding best practices and things like that. But with building UI, I feel like my expertise is not deep enough that I can actually articulate any any principles, you know. Okay. Like, so I understand them well enough to build passable UIs, but not enough to teach other people. But sure. I will say that one thing that has kind of resonated with me is a comment I heard a few years ago, that what we ascribe to good design when it comes to software UIs, 90% of it comes down to familiarity. When we say that something is intuitive and easy to use, what 90% of what we mean, whether we realize it or not, is that it's familiar to us. So I'd say to lean into that, not to aspire to make novel or original UI metaphors, but usually the kind of obvious one that maybe is even a little bit boring is the one that is going to be easiest for your users to get their heads around.
Sure.
So I think that is the main thing. And then the other thing, I'm not going to articulate this well, but I feel like your application has to have a mental model that your user can access, or I should say users should be able to form a mental model about your software. So it's not enough that everything be possible. It has to be, you know, that they expect that what they expect to happen happens. So for example, if you have like 5 sliders and 4 of them wait for you to click update before updating, and then the 5th one doesn't, you know, it immediately applies its change, that's breaking the user's mental model of what that update button does. Even if in reactive, you know, in Shiny's reactivity, you can do stuff like that, it doesn't mean it's a good idea if it subverts the user's mental model of how something works. So it's really important to try to put yourself in the user's shoes and ask whether something would be understandable when something happens. So
right. It almost seems like if you're developing a pretty complex app, that early on you almost do like a version of user acceptance testing or something like that, where you get a group of people and be like, hey, do you expect this to happen or this to happen? And then you kind of iterate along that way. But I think for a lot of us, we're kind of picking up those skills along the way. But I like you, I'm not a designer in terms of what's the best way to lay this stuff out, but I just try to make it functional so that they expect something to see, they'll see it. And if there's something not obvious, that now I'm heavily taking advantage of Dean Atelli's ShinyJS package to kind of walk them through certain messages or hiding certain things or disabling certain things until they do an action, so that it's more clear to them. Don't go to that tab until you click this button first,
right.
Things like that. So
yeah,
lots of ways. I think that there's kind of an art to tying all that together, but I think other than practice, or practice is really the only thing that can enhance those skills a bit. So one other thing that admittedly I was kind of hoping would be touched on, which who knows, maybe you guys have a solution for this in the future. It's pretty established how we go about automated testing in terms of like package development. Obviously, with Hadley's Test That framework, it's stupidly easy now to do it for a package. But in terms of testing a Shiny app, especially in terms of like the UI elements doing what you expect them to do, I've seen some attempts at this, in particular a package called R Selenium. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So the author has some examples of how you can test a Shiny app. Now that it's got some dependencies. That's not really my biggest pain point. It's more about if you have a complex application, remembering what you called certain inputs and how you go about scripting all that. I don't know if you had any advice on terms of testing Shiny apps kind of directly, or if that's something you guys are looking at in the future.
Yeah, that is definitely a pain point right now. I think that it's challenging in any language or any framework to do kind of from the user's perspective, that kind of automated testing. I'm definitely familiar with Selenium from other languages. I have not used, or at least I can't remember if I've used the R version. But as far as I know, that is probably your best bet in terms of the end-to-end testing.
Okay.
We do recommend that you do as much of your business logic, I guess. I mean, business in quotes. Your non-Shiny specific logic in functions that can be separately tested. So you can sort of unit test at the function level, and then hopefully your server, your Shiny server function will primarily be about wiring those kind of already tested functions together, which is not a substitute, but you know, it should help. And then the other thing is that we have talked in the past, we've still not done this, but we've talked about having a mode that Shiny runs in where instead of calling run app, you give it a list of input values, and say, you know, calculate app or something, and it goes and it runs all the observers and it runs all the outputs and it gives you back a list of outputs, and then you can just verify that, you know, the tables and plots and whatever that you were expecting have not changed. That's not going to work for every application. Some applications, especially if you use render UI to create inputs or something like that,
right,
are just not going to be covered in that kind of a world. You still need R Selenium, but you know, it kind of is what it is. The other thing that we could try is to run some kind of you know, headless browser. So we would run R Selenium for you, or something like PhantomJS or what have you.
Right.
And then, you know, do some kind of snapshot of the HTML and just make sure that the HTML is what you expect it to be. So it's all stuff that we've talked about, but have not quite risen to the top of our feature list. So.
Right. Yeah, the PhantomJS framework is intriguing. I actually worked with our internal IT group to get that installed in our system so that I could at least try this testing framework out. So I think, yeah, as we go along, we'll hopefully get some more best practices. But I think the point you did make, it resonates with me, that all of what I'll consider the back-end processing that, like you said, is not Shiny specific. I've had some apps where it's basically that part is basically in another package that we developed internally. So as long as that package author does some automated testing, then we know that, hey, this function has been, you know, quote unquote validated to work because of our automated tests. It's more about just making sure we're calling it the right way and things like that. So well, I'll definitely keep my eyes on that going forward. And then one other thing that was a nice theme in terms of, especially from the users that were contributing talks, I think the whole HTML widget ecosystem has really kind of exploded in terms of the innovations that we're seeing and what they put inside their Shiny apps. What's your take on where HTML widgets are going and how that's going to help propel Shiny development in the future?
Yeah, so it's getting complicated, frankly. I think when we created the first version of HTML widgets, it was very obvious. We had a very obvious, pardon me. We had a very obvious goal in mind, and that was to take JavaScript libraries that represent outputs and embed them, build them in such a way that they could be embedded in R Markdown documents, in Shiny apps, and from the console, all with just writing the JavaScript bindings once. And, you know, that was simple charter. It was, you know, I won't say it was easy. There were definitely difficult things that we had to build into it in order to make that possible, especially to get it to work well in all those scenarios. But at least the semantics were very clear about what we were trying to do. And in the time since then, what we've been working on is trying to extend that model of using R to generate JavaScript and HTML and CSS automatically to encompass more than just outputs. So this is quite a big topic. I'll see if I can boil it down. There are two main scenarios that we target with HTML widgets going forward. One is the, I'll say the Ramnaths of the world, right? Where they're very conversant in R, they're very conversant in JavaScript. And HTML widgets is really like a convenience for him. It's a very convenient way for him to take data in R, do computations on it, and then put it together to compose JavaScript-based single-page applications that don't have any backend. And I say it's a convenience for him in that what I mean by that is there's nothing that HTML widgets is doing that he could not himself do because he knows JavaScript.
Okay.
But it makes it very, very convenient. So what we're letting people like him do is to, I think one of the main things that's been missing for people like him is with HTML widgets today, you can create the widgets really easily. But then if you want to write additional kind of customizations or whatever in JavaScript, especially if you want to tie together multiple widgets, like have actions in one widget affect actions in another, that's been something that we have not made easy at all. And if there's a solution at all, it's implemented on a per widget basis. So quite recently, maybe a month or two ago, I submitted a PR that lets you annotate arbitrary HTML, just pipe it into any widget, and when that widget executes or is rendered, that HTML, that JavaScript that you wrote will be inlined into its render function. That's not going to mean anything to you unless you're an expert with HTML widgets already. But if I had example code in front of you, you could see that basically anything that you can do using a widget's JavaScript API, you can now do when you create the widget from R. You can just add a string of what additional thing you want to do to it, including bind it to another widget. So people like Ramnath now have the ability to kind of go hog wild if they want to. Let me find the name of that function for you. So
sure, yeah, mm-hmm. I'll put it in the show notes. Yeah,
I'll look it up and then I'll let you know. Yeah. Oh, it's on static render complete, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Okay, it's something like that.
I'll have to look that up then. Yeah.
And there should be some examples if you Google around for it. So that's one set of scenarios. Is for people like him, making it possible to write additional customizations in JavaScript and kind of making blowing out the possibilities to anything you can cover in JavaScript. Now, that being said, that doesn't describe the average R user, right? Most R users don't also know JavaScript. So one thing that we've also been pushing on is trying to let you take multiple widgets, drop them in the same page, and as long as they all fulfill a previously agreed upon contract, then they will automatically start working together. So you could drop, a scatter plot in, and then a time series. Maybe time series is not a good example. Let's say a scatter plot and like a leaflet map. And when you make a selection, create a brush over the scatter plot, then whatever points you've selected in the scatter plot will also light up in leaflet and vice versa. So linked brushing, basically. And what we envisioned was a way to basically just put enough communication mechanisms in place for HTML widgets generically that this could just happen, like this would just automatically start working. And that work is so experimental that we actually have implemented it in a separate package called Crosstalk.
Oh, I was going to ask about this because I think I saw Kent Russell from the Tommy Portfolio, the user, he commented on this in an issue, right?
Yeah. There's an issue it must be 50 messages deep at least at this point that is all about this stuff and where that was where Crosstalk was kind of born out of. The Plotly guys have done some work to support Crosstalk, Carson Sievert in particular. Ryan Hafen is now doing some work on our Bokeh to have Bokeh support this as well. Now, if it turns out that this idea has legs, if it turns out that, yes, we can usefully do this, not just for those two, really big toolkits, but it gets embraced in general by the HTML widgets community, then those changes would probably be merged into HTML widgets itself, and HTML widgets would just have this crosstalk mechanism as a feature. That said, it's very speculative. I really, when we dreamed up these ideas last October or whatever, I kind of thought it'd be a slam dunk, but the further we get into it, the more I kind of feel like, nah, this could go either way.
Right. It's a little early to tell, but it sounds like there's a lot of things under the hood that need to happen correctly to make this seamless then.
Yeah. A lot of people want this to happen. A lot of people are really excited about this. I mean, I think that's the reason why the thread on this topic got so big in the HTML widgets issue repo. I think that enthusiasm may carry us over the finish line, but it's different than Shiny in that there's just trade-offs everywhere, and there's no solution that doesn't have problems. So we just have to pick which set of problems we want to live with.
Right.
I should add one more thing in HTML widgets land, is that Ramnath is working on adding reactivity to HTML widgets itself. So
wow.
The kind of client, the kind of server-side reactivity you get with Shiny, he's trying to duplicate on the front end with inspired by some JavaScript reactivity libraries. And he's hoping to have, you know, pretty similar semantics to what you do in Shiny. So you'd have, reactive expressions or their equivalent, observers or their equivalent. You'd have observable inputs and things like that. And at the end of the day, what he's hoping you can do is you can tie HTML widgets that represent inputs, not just outputs now, but have input widgets and then have them connect together with output widgets in pretty straightforward ways. And if you want to do additional calculations to, you know, transform that data, kind of like reactive expressions, you can express that in JavaScript by kind of including it in your R commands. So you'd make two widgets and then add the equivalent of a reactive expression, and it'd be a string, and then you put some JavaScript in there, and drop all that into some kind of a template, and they would all render on the page, and then you'd have this interactive, sort of things. And I think where that leaves you is now you have HTML widgets, which, when you use them standalone, they are really nice in that they don't require any server infrastructure, and you can use them anywhere. And you get really responsive interactivity, and you can combine that with Shiny, which is necessary when you want to do any kind of recomputation at runtime in R. So if you want to, fit models or do predictions or, access large data sources, all those things would still require Shiny. And then you can also use them together, so you kind of get the best of both worlds.
That sounds really intriguing. I'll kind of see where the dust settles on that, but I've been using multiple widgets in my apps, like our hands on table or diagram R, things like that. If there's just ways to make those talk to each other seamlessly, oh my goodness, that's gonna be huge, I think. So that, I guess I'm one of those people that's enthusiastic about where this goes down the road, but not a trivial problem to solve by any means. I'll kind of wrap up with, now that you've had a few days to hopefully decompress a bit after the conference, going forward for the next time you offer this, which I'm assuming might be next year, what are some of the key takeaways you got from this iteration that will help you kind of plan or structure the conference going forward in the future?
Yeah, I was surprised by how much positive feedback there was. First of all, there were positive feedbacks about all the talks. I don't want to give the wrong impression. Every single one of the talks was very well received. But in particular, people seemed very hungry for the tutorials and said they could have done with even more tutorials. That was a surprise to me. And I think we would probably lean into that a little bit more next time then. And the other thing is, I think this is probably, I'm just going to guess that this is the last time we do a single track conference. It just seems like we could have done so much more. We could have done more user talks. We could have done like a lot of other things. But we had to cut a lot of stuff for time. So, I think it's likely that in the future we do a multi-track conference. Honestly, it's not my favorite. Like, I really enjoy single track conferences. But I think just in the interest of getting the right content in there and, you know, still keeping it to a couple of days, we'll probably go multi-track next time.
That's cool. I know for a lot of us that I talked to over there, it was our first ever like attendance of any R related conference. So it's a little bit of an anomaly that obviously use R is obviously multi-track and things like that. But if this is the last time you guys do a single track, then I'm really fortunate that I could see it. Yeah. But hopefully going forward, it will be easy to strike the balance between, you know, like you said, the users that want to know more about how things work, hence the tutorials, but I also get just as much enjoyment out of just seeing the showcase of whatever people are doing that gives us enough inspiration to say, okay, I want to emulate parts from what he did or what she did and kind of tie it all together. So
yeah,
2 days, it was jam-packed, but obviously a lot of us probably wanted it like a day longer just to dive into more things. But hopefully going forward, it's easy for you guys to find a good way to organize that going forward. So,
yeah.
So yeah, Joe, I think this has been a really enlightening conversation to hear more of your perspective on all things Shiny and your background before that. So I just want to thank you very much for joining me today and hope you have a great rest of the day and good luck with the new features in Shiny and RStudio going forward.
Great. Thanks, Eric.
All right, everyone, we'll be right back after this. Okay, I hope you really enjoyed hearing those conversations. I know I was just so excited to be able to talk with them about these topics and just being able to meet them, you know, put faces with all the commit messages and all the package news and all everything going on in terms of their development of RStudio. It's just really good to kind of sit down with them face to face and get their perspectives on it. And I will admit kind of my, this was a little geeky of me, but I wasn't the only one that did this. I did bring my copy of the Advanced R book that Hadley wrote, and I got his autograph. I just couldn't resist. And even I got the autograph of another member that I didn't have a chance to interview directly, but Winston Chang also signed my R graphics cookbook, which was a real thrill for me because I've been using his book for ggplot for who knows how many, it's been at least a couple years now. And I always tell people that if you're new to ggplot2, you gotta check that book out. It just gets everything to the point, but he really walks through it practically. So anyway, it was kind of like, these are kind of like celebrities to me, so it was really cool to be able to talk to get those autographs. So hopefully I keep those in a safe place. Don't want anything happening to them. So I think what I'll say next is, I think overall in terms of the way the conference was run, I was really impressed with the way they got the material in and how they kind of paced things throughout. I mentioned even during the interviews with the team that I thought, you know, they did an excellent job here. And I think their directions for the next time are definitely going to have more people and possibly multiple tracks. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But then just some other things I'll mention is that I was able to hear about through the Lightning talks and some of the extended talks, some really interesting community efforts that are interacting with Shiny directly, either through add-on packages or through really nice applications. In fact, I'm actually going to use our next segment to talk about some of this stuff I discovered in our package pick. So one of the main themes of the developer conference in terms of the technical material was the concept of modules, which are kind of like, as you heard in the previous interviews, those are really like the way you can encapsulate certain parts of your Shiny application as kind of their own unit, as they say. and then be able to plug those in multiple, you know, places in your application and not have to worry about the namespace issues or having multiple inputs be the same name. That was always a headache for me when I was starting to build a fairly complex application. So modules have been a great way to kind of figure out how the best, you know, segment parts of your application and be able to kind of tidy those up independently, but be able to use them in multiple ways. So a lot of us are kind of getting to know this feature right now in our app development, but I do have an example to share. One of the presenters, I believe, in one of the lightning talks was Ian Little, and he has created an R package called Shiny Pod. And while it, and frankly, this is the first package I've seen by someone in the community that basically follows the advice of the RStudio team in terms of making a package out of whatever modules you're developing. So Shiny Pod is got basically two modules inside. You can upload and process a CSV file into a typical R data frame, as well as doing a pretty nice looking die graph using two y-axes. But this was really the first time I seen somebody really try to package up a module, and I thought, okay, this is a good reference for us to follow. So I'm developing modules in some of the applications I'm developing at work. So as I see certain parts of my app that I think others in my team or outside of my team might be able to use, then now I have kind of a good reference point for how you might tidy those up into a package format. So we'll have a link to Shiny Pod in the show notes in case you're interested in checking that out. It is on GitHub. I don't believe it's on CRAN yet, but again, it's fairly new, so perhaps down the road they'll be releasing it on CRAN in the future. So I think with that, we're going to kind of wrap up this episode. I will mention that I've heard from a couple possible future interviewees that I'm going to be in talk with, and hopefully get them on the show to get their perspectives on things with R, maybe with Shiny as well. And then I'll just mention again that the best way you can actually have multiple ways of contacting me in terms of feedback. First, each episode will have its own kind of comment trail that you can leave a comment on via the typical discuss framework. You can also head to our contact page. And of course, the website for the podcast is r-podcast.org. You can click the contact link at the top and then just send me a quick message if you have topic suggestions or you know, feedback on the episodes or whatever have you. Just please pass it along my way. I did hear some people really excited about the past couple of interviews, so I think in future episodes I'm definitely going to try and get others in the community, you know, to talk with me, even if it's not very long, just to kind of share their perspective on what they're up to and where they think R is headed in the future. So again, thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this multi-part series on Shiny, and in particular the Shiny Developer Conference. I know I'm excited to see where Shiny is going from here and being able to use some of these new features, that some of which have been here already for a while and some are brand new, but just being able to use this knowledge and apply it to make my applications better. I'm really looking forward to it. We'll see by the time I release this if they've released the actual videos of the presentations, and if they have, I'll put it in the show notes. Other than that, I'll just also link to other resources that were mentioned, including the new version of RStudio that was released that has a lot of some of the features that we talked about in these discussions. So that's going to put a wrap on episode 18. Until next time.
End of line.